Arab League adopts a resolution to readmit Syria after more than a decade of its suspension from the bloc. The Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Erihah enters its third week. Also in the headlines, British police come under fire for the arrest of dozens of people, including members of an anti-monarchy group, on the day of the coronation of King Charles. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. A top story, the Arab League adopting a resolution to readmit Syria, and that after nearly 12 years of its suspension. This consolidates a regional push to normalize relations with Damascus. The decision was made at a meeting of Arab League foreign ministers in Cairo. Secretary General of the Pan-Arab Bloc, Ahmed Abolgait, even asked Syrian President al-Assad to take part in the summit if he wanted to. Damascus has reacted to the decision, calling on Arab states to show mutual respect. The Syrian Foreign Ministry stressed the importance of joint work and dialogue to deal with challenges facing the Arab world. Syria's membership of the Arab League was suspended in November 2011. That after the conflict and foreign-backed militancy gripped the country, aimed at toppling the democratically elected government of President Bashar al-Assad. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says that the U.S. has suffered a humiliating defeat in its so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Raisi made a comment in an address to the fifth export potential exhibition in the country. The president said that Iran has achieved progress despite sanctions and threats. Raisi said that Iranian scientists and industrialists have achieved anything that was banned under the sanctions. He added that economic operators have also circumvented and offset the sanctions regime. The president also mentioned the negotiations on the removal of anti-Iran sanctions imposed following the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal. He said Iran has never abandoned those talks, but it's not tying the national economy and growth to the political process. The fifth edition of the Export Potential Exhibition of Iran has kicked off in Tehran. Iran Expo 2023 aims to boost the country's exports. Businessmen, entrepreneurs, and officials from more than 60 countries are invited in the exhibition that covers 12 specialized fields. Our correspondent Mahdi Abbasian has talked to a Bahraini businessman on the sidelines of the expo.
There is a lot of potential for Iran to go to other markets by boosting and by putting more emphasis on the advertising, using the online and Instagram, so the people, they know about what you have. There is a lot of potential for Iran. Everyone to see from logistic cost aspect. For example, anybody who want to import from China, let's say, or for India, he need to pay a lot for logistic.
Yeah.
But when it comes from Iran to the whole GC, the cost will be lower.
Exactly.
This is one element of cost. Another element of cost, I know that Iranian product in manufacturing, the most important element in the costing is the manufacturing cost. They call it prime cost, which it consists of direct labor cost and direct material cost. Both of them that you can guarantee, you can get it from Iran at a good, reasonable price.
Exactly.
And at a good quality. I do advise fans that Iran should improve relation with the whole GCC.
Which has happened, you see.
With Saudi Arabia is a very great country.
It was a very
country.
Positive step.
Okay.
Recently
and,
we did that.
And I know that His Highness Mohammed bin Salman now is just trying to improve the industry, economy. I think by relation, trust, very important. and exchanging information of some technology. For example, Iran, they have the best snack. Iran, they have the best tuna. Mm-hmm. Tuna compared to Southeast Asia and this one, nobody can compete. Iran is with the level of Spanish tuna. Mm-hmm.
The Israeli regime has demolished several more Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank. And that happened after regime forces raided several villages in the cities of Ariha and Bethlehem. In Ariha or Jericho, they completely destroyed a guest house, two homes under construction, belonging to a family, and a fodder store. A car wash workshop and a school were also destroyed in Bethlehem. The school was demolished by Israeli forces in 2017, but it was rebuilt 6 years ago. Israel routinely demolishes Palestinian homes and structures in the occupied territories, citing lack of construction permits, which are impossible to obtain. Rights groups and Palestinians say that the move is part of Israel's land grab policy to expand its settlements. The Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha is now in its third week. According to local media, military checkpoints have been set up at all main entrances to the ancient city, also known as Jericho. Israeli forces inspect any vehicle traffic, they search Palestinian passengers, and perform identity checks. The city of the Jenin Aqaba Jabr refugee camp have also seen deadly raids in recent weeks. Since the beginning of the year, at least 9 Palestinians have been killed and scores more injured or arrested in the same city. Mona Kandil gives us some details regarding the consequences of the Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha.
In the last few months, clashes had been taking place in between Palestinians from the city of Ariha and specifically from the Aqaba Jabr refugee camp and Israeli forces. This is new for the Israelis that this specific area, Ariha, and the surrounding areas, mainly the Aqaba Jabr refugee camp, to witness clashes between the Israeli forces and the Palestinians. At least 10 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli soldiers in Aqaba Jabr and Ariha. That's why the Israelis set military checkpoints at the entrances to Ariha and completely closed the Aqaba Jabr refugee camp, preventing people from entering or leaving the refugee camp. We have to mention that this closure, of course, had cost the Palestinians millions of U.S. dollars losses, mainly in the agricultural sector.
The Palestinians have attended a memorial service for slain Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh ahead of the first anniversary of her killing by Israeli forces. The ceremony was held at a church in the occupied East Al-Quds. Al Jazeera reporter Abu Akleh was shot in the head and killed while covering an Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Jenin on May 11th last year. Days later, Israeli troops also attacked a crowd of Palestinian mourners during her funeral, wounding 33 people. The murder of Abu Akleh sparked a wave of condemnations across the world that showed the extent that Israeli regime can go to prevent the media from reporting the oppression of Palestinians. Media watchdogs and rights groups have repeatedly dismissed Tel Aviv regime's account that the killing was unintentional. They argue that the journalist was wearing easily recognizable press attire at the time. British police have drawn condemnations for the arrest of dozens of people on the day of coronation of King Charles. Several lawmakers and human rights groups have criticized the approach. The police forces detained more than 50 people, including leading members of the anti-monarchy group Republic. Rights groups have labeled the arrests incredibly alarming and a dangerous precedent. According to the police, people were held for alleged affray, public order offenses, and breach of peace. The arrests were made days after the government granted new anti-protest powers to the police force. Now, on that note, we've discussed reactions to the British police's arrest of people on the day of the coronation with our analysts on our news review program.
Let's bring in Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics, who joins us from London. We also have David Miller, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher, who joins us from Bristol. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Rodney Shakespeare, I'll first start with you. Taking a look at the economics of this in terms of the finances, I should say, I'd like to get your idea on this, which is said to be roughly about £150 million that was spent on this. The timing, of course, couldn't be any worse based on the cost of living crisis that many Brits are experiencing. Doesn't this play a factor in the psyche of Brits when they take a look at this whole show that was put on?
Yes, of course. There's the economics and there's the show. But we're actually talking about the demonstrations of people being arrested. And the issue here is not about whether you support the monarchy. Many people do. It's not about whether there was any disturbance which might panic the horses, which could be very dangerous. It's about the fact that people were arrested for demonstrations which had been agreed with the police long beforehand. And if I may say so, it's not even about the arrests at those demonstrations. You see, there's been a new law passed, the Public Order Act, and it is being used against not only people protesting lawfully against the coronation. It is being used against those protesting about the environment, about poverty. And it's being done in circumstances where there is protest going right the way across Europe and the censorship coming from the mainstream journalistic organizations and the social conversation organizations is absolutely incredible. The biggest issue of all is they're not discussing the basis of the inflation, which is the eastward march of NATO. So behind this, you're on these demonstrations, which were lawful and agreed with the police, you've got this harder line, this more violent line, and that is a reflection of the increased censorship at a time where the issues are getting more sensitive and there's more distress, and as you are indicating, people financially are coming under pressure.
All right, let's talk about this a little bit further with you, David Miller, the Public Order Act, of how that in a sense it does suppress opposition in terms of protests. I guess that's what they're trying to do. Tell us what you think this does, and of course at the same time how the UK has been very critical of other countries, and in particular the Islamic Republic, when it had its riots on the streets, and how it condemned the way that the authorities here, especially the security apparatus, dealt with it. But in particular, how that pans out in the UK.
So, I mean, I think the widening of the lens on this is appropriate, because this is about a collapse of the last vestiges of democracy. And democracy was never really a very strong species in the UK, but this is about the collapse of those last vestiges, so that we can have banners removed by large phalanxes of police officers simply for being displayed on a public occasion. In the context where, of course, we have journalists, in particular Julian Assange, locked up for nothing for 4 years now. I mean, this is as we've just been seeing, a Europe-wide problem, which is to do with the US and to do with the war in Ukraine, where democracy, the last shreds of democracy are collapsing everywhere. So you can be arrested now in many European countries for having a vague view that that Russia is not the baddie in the Ukraine conflict. Now, of course, this contrasts, as you say, with the treatment of the British government of the Islamic Republic of Iran, where, of course, there were riots, etc., last year, much of which was created and prompted by the US, by the CIA, and with some support from the Zionist entity of Israel. So, I mean, this is obviously a matter of hypocrisy, but all through the country, in the UK, we've seen various ways in which protest has broken out. Yes, of course, there have been the protesters on the day who've been arrested, but we've seen at football matches in Glasgow, in Liverpool, the fans chanting against the coronation, and indeed urging country to feed the poor. There have been political demonstrations in Scotland yesterday where Not My King was the chant, which was to the forefront of the march. So this is a widespread phenomenon of disdain for the monarchy, and it's dangerous for them.
Thank you very much for that, David Miller, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher. Rodney Shakespeare, thank you, professor of economics from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back. There seems to be no end in sight for the war in Ukraine as Kyiv and Moscow launch new drone attacks against each other. The cities of Sevastopol and Saki in Crimea were targeted by 10 drone strikes. Russian Defense Ministry says it's destroyed 22 Ukrainian drones over the Black Sea overnight. Russia has several air bases in that area, but local officials said there was no damage. Over the past week, at least 5 Russian fuel facilities close to Ukraine's borders and in Crimea have suffered similar attacks, and 2 more drones crashed on the Kremlin roof. Meanwhile, Russia has also launched widespread drone strikes on Ukraine, including on capital Kyiv. Ukraine officials say that 2/3 of the country were targeted. And that's a wrap for this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Chinese officials have always warned the United States about selling weapons to Taiwan. Chinese experts are saying America is trying to make instrumental use of Taiwan to contain China, but that these actions are very dangerous. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. China Daily has covered this story and tells us more. Beijing says Washington should halt arms sales to Taiwan since the U.S. is turning the island into a powder keg. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Mao Ning made the remark with reference to a Taiwan-U.S. defense industry forum held in Taipei on Wednesday, 3rd of May, where a delegation of U.S. arms dealers called for deeper cooperation between Washington and Taipei. The spokesperson said, "Lately, the U.S. and the Taiwan authorities have been stepping up military collusion," adding, "It is further proof that the United States is turning Taiwan into a powder keg, which only spells trouble for our Taiwan compatriots." The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning said, "U.S. arms sales to the Taiwan region seriously violates the One China Principle and the 3 China-U.S. joint communiques." Mao Ning added, "China firmly opposes them." Mao Ning warned any external forces meddling in Taiwanese affairs may have to pay for their actions. She said the Chinese side will take strong and resolute measures to firmly defend our sovereignty and our security interests. Any external forces that interfere in China's domestic affairs and undermine peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait shall bear the consequences and pay for their actions. Beijing regards the island as part of its own territory under the One China principle. In recent months, tensions between China and the United States have been rising over Washington's growing military and political support for Taiwan. China often conducts military exercises around the island as a warning to Taiwan's separatist forces and their collusion with the United States. Bloomberg News Agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Taiwan is reportedly in the process of buying 400 land-launched Harpoon anti-ship missiles from the United States, in a move that is expected to draw condemnation from China, which considers the self-rule island part of its own territory. Citing U.S.-Taiwan Business Council President Rupert Hammond Chambers and sources, the U.S. Daily reported recently that Taiwan was poised to purchase 400 missiles under a $1.17 billion contract announced by the Pentagon on 7th of April. At the time, the Pentagon said production was expected to complete by March 2029. Commenting on the news report, Taiwanese Defense Ministry spokesperson Sun Li Fang said, "The ministry had previously disclosed information about the purchase, adding it was confident the deal would go according to schedule. In 2020, Taipei said it planned to obtain land-based Boeing-made Harpoon anti-ship missiles as part of its military modernization program. According to Bloomberg News Agency, Taiwan previously purchased a ship-launch version of Harpoon missiles, but the new contract marks the first time it will get the mobile land-based variant of the missile." Bloomberg cited U.S.-Taiwan Business Council President Rupert Hammond Chambers as saying the contract with Boeing was issued by the U.S. Naval Air Systems Command on Taiwan's behalf. Beijing views Chinese Taipei as an inseparable part of China, reportedly warning Washington against unwise provocations. China has previously warned Washington that providing the self-rule island with advanced weaponry would breach Chinese sovereignty and do severe damage to bilateral ties. The report comes just days after U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy met Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen in California and stressed the need to accelerate arms deliveries to the self-rule island. The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. Tensions between Washington and Beijing are now entering a rather dangerous phase. China has launched military drills around Taiwan in what it called a stern warning to the self-rule island. The United Sharp Sword, the three-day military exercises, sent planes, ships and personnel into the maritime areas and airspace up the Taiwan Strait, off the northern and southern coasts of the island of Taiwan. At the outset, the Chinese military said the type of weaponry China will use during these military exercises would include long-range rocket artillery, naval destroyers, missile boats, air force fighters and bombers. The military exercises were to include live-fire drills off the coast of China's Fujian province, which faces Taiwan. The exercises follow a provocative meeting held in the U.S. state of California between Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen and the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy. China, which regards self-rule Taiwan as part of its own territory, was enraged by this visit. Beijing has vowed to eventually take Taiwan over by force if necessary. The military exercises by China came as a delegation of U.S. legislators, led by Chairman of the House Foreign Relations Committee, Michael McCaul, was visiting Taiwan and met with Taiwanese leader Tsai Ing-wen. Michael McCaul claimed the delegation was in Taipei to show its support for the democratic island. Speaking at an event in Taiwan, Michael McCaul underlined that the visit was intended to demonstrate strong support for self-rule Taiwan. McCaul's trip to Taiwan was not the first such visit by a senior U.S. official to the self-rule island. Last August, then-U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan along with a delegation of Democratic Party members of the House, to reaffirm Washington's support for Taiwan. Apart from Nancy Pelosi, some of the other high-ranking U.S. officials have on numerous occasions shown Washington's all-out support for Taiwan, including U.S. President Joe Biden. President Biden has given the strongest warning to Beijing, reiterating Washington's commitment to defending Taiwan's military in the event of an attack by China. Beijing has reiterated its sovereignty over the island, saying no individual force can hold China back from achieving the goal of national reunification. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Mao Ning said Beijing is firmly opposed to any form of official interaction between the United States and Taiwan. But what if China tries to reclaim Taiwan? In such a scenario, would the United States and its allies be able to prevent this from happening? While Beijing asserts that the self-rule island is an inseparable part of Chinese territory and that the future of Taiwan lies in reunification with the motherland, what objective is the United States seeking other than provocation? The pertinent question should be whether the United States would stay quiet and take no action if China were to station its forces and fleet around Central and Latin America or anywhere near U.S. borders. Undoubtedly, the security of Taiwan has the potential to be used as a political tool by the United States and NATO against Beijing. But a more dangerous scenario is one in which Taiwan could be used as a reason for conflict between the West and China, much like what is currently happening in Ukraine between the West and Russia.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. Ya sari'a rida, ighfir li man la yamliku illa ad-du'a, fa innaka fa'alun lima tasha'a. Brothers and sisters, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail Supplication. Ya sari'a ar-ridha, ighfir liman la yamliku illa ad-du'a, fa innaka fa'alun lima tasha'. O he whose pleasure is quickly achieved, forgive him who owns nothing but supplication, for you do what you will. يا من اسمه دواء وذكره شفاء وطاعته غناء. Oh, he whose name is remedy, whose remembrance is cure, and whose obedience is wealth. ارحم من رأس ماله الرجاء وسلاحه البكاء. Have mercy upon him whose capital is hope and whose weapon is tears. Brothers and sisters, Allah's pleasure is quickly achieved by a servant who is under his wrath due to wrongdoing and has resorted to beseeching and repentance afterwards. Because Allah's mercy, Allah's love, Allah's generosity, it is infinite. And that's why someone who has committed sins for even years without any lapses is forgiven by only a moment of repentance, by only a moment of regret, and his few deeds are accepted and attended to. Of course, he has to make up for what he has skipped of his actions, obligatory actions, and the rights of the people whom he has missed, of course. But his repentance, his regret is accepted. Therefore, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, after the divine phrase, O whose pleasure is quickly achieved, Ya Sari' al-Ridha, states, اغفر لمن لا يملك إلا الدعاء. Forgive him who owns nothing but supplication. Why? Because a real sincere supplication implies the supplicant's poverty and meanness, and that he owns no means of worship. He owns nothing of obedience or good deeds to be forgiven for. That he owns no benefit or loss. He cannot remove any evil or gain any good. The supplicant has not come to Allah's presence but with your assistance and mercy. If Allah, your assistance, if Allah, your mercy had not attracted him, the supplicant could not utter the supplicating phrases. He couldn't have said even a word of these supplicating phrases. And he could not weep for some moments. Such a servant, of course, is worthy of your mercy and benevolence. He should call upon you. The generous does not ask a poor servant about what he has brought. Rather, he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, asks about what he wants. So, you have said that if the servant comes one step towards me, I would take 10 steps towards him. My Lord, I am so needful, I am so disabled that I cannot come towards you even as much as 1 step. But I want to. You take a step towards me that so that I would get free of satanic desires and carnal soul, so that I would get subjected to your mercy.
Oh, he who is readily pleased, forgive one who owes nothing but supplications to you. You do what you will. Oh, he whose name is the remedy and whose remembrance is a sure cure for all ailments, and obedience to whom makes oneself sufficient. Have mercy on one whose only asset is hope and whose only armor is weeping. Oh, he who perfected all bounties and who was off all misfortune. Oh, light who illuminates those who are in darkness. Oh, omniscient who knows without learning. bless Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, and do unto me in accordance with that which befits you. Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, Imam Ali alayhi salam talks to the Almighty Allah by calling him Ya Sari al-Rida. This calling him, O whose pleasure is quickly achieved, can mean two things. The first is that Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is teaching us that you have to return to Almighty Allah knowing that He is Sari al-Rida. If you want to supplicate to your Lord, if you want to talk to your Lord, if you want to be forgiven, you have to realize that He is the only one who is Sari al-Rida. He is the only one who is quickly achieved. Because you have got nothing to present to Him, you have got nothing to be forgiven for, but yet, even at this moment, He is Sari al-Rida. Imam Ali alayhi salam is teaching us the method, the prerequisite of acceptance of supplications. اغفر لمن لا يملك إلا الدعاء. Yet, even this sinful, regretful servant has one thing, and that is nothing but supplication. Ya Sari al-Rida, O the one whose pleasure is quickly achieved, forgive him who owns nothing, not even a single good deed, but illa du'a, but supplication. فَإِنَّكَ فَعَالٌ لِمَا تَشَى. So you do what you will. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
First days of January. 2.
The beginning of the year in early January, these days always have a special feeling for me. I was born 22 years ago in such days in a village in the province of Aleppo. I've always had these feelings in me in early January. Perhaps none of my friends, relatives, or even I thought that after 12 years of my birth in this land, events would happen that would change the course of history. I am Fatemeh Ali, a student of journalism at Allameh Tabatabwe University in Tehran. In my country, due to the war in Syria, I was forced to leave school and immigrate to Iran. The shy little girl in the town of Nubl, whose biggest concern was the half-hour drive away from the University of Aleppo, today writes stories for us that include hundreds of volumes of books. Today is my birthday. My friends have invited me to listen to my travelogue. Like me, they too have endured the hardships of exile and immigration. Today I was supposed to tell them the story of my 1.5 years of absence from my hometown. Years of siege, famine, and starvation. 4 years without gas and electricity during the bone-chilling cold of northern Syria. This is only part of the suffering of the cities of Nubl and Al-Zahra. In those days, the dreams and wishes of the people depended on the fighters fighting outside the city. Those whose hearts burned like ours and did their best to not let the city fall into the hands of the Takfiri terrorists. The atmosphere in Aleppo has now returned to the days before the war. Aleppo experienced a very bitter battle and felt the heartbreak caused by the battle that killed more than 500,000 people and displaced millions. Damascus, the capital of Syria, was wounded, but it refused to collapse and give in. This city is one of the oldest cities in the world. Its inhabitants of all religions and sects lived in peace for centuries, without any war or bloodshed. But suddenly, it became face-to-face with a phenomenon called Daesh and al-Nusra. When I had to leave the country due to the war and travel to Iran, I had to travel from Aleppo to Damascus. The route was normally 4 hours. But during the war, it took 10 to 11 hours to travel. Even those armed to their teeth did not dare to cross it for fear of their lives. But what happened today is more of a miracle. It is as if the martyrs have brought eternal security for Syria. Expectations were high for the Levant, but as it is said, the road between Damascus and Mecca will see considerable security and tranquility during the time of the apocalypse. Maybe if we said something during the presence of Daesh and Takfiris in our country, no one would believe us, but today I travel from the north to the south of Syria without any fear or worry. No one bothers me. Idlib province welcomes you. I am a member of the media and the child of Nubl. Hama welcomes you. I can stop anywhere on this route, and I can even show the situation of my country to the whole world. A country who was involuntarily entered into a world war. This neighborhood is where Syrian Jews live. This neighborhood is one of the oldest neighborhoods in Damascus. This place with the narrow alleys and short roofs. We have to tell the stories of Haj Qasim from this place, the commander who did not allow the story of the bazaar of the Levant to be repeated. Haj Qasim left his homeland and came to Syria so that the events that occurred after the Battle of Karbala in the Levant would not be repeated in the streets of Damascus. Haj Qasim broke the siege of Nubl and Al-Zahra so that the sanctity of the divine sanctuary would not be violated again. This is why he was named the Master of Martyrs of the Defenders of the Shrine. Anyone who wants to know more about them should read the story of Karbala over and over again.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important question, and that question is about the virtues of the teacher. A lot of people ask, kids, one of the major questions that they have is, what am I going to be when I grow up? And this is important questions that every person asks himself when he's young. And, nobody ever thinks, wouldn't it be good if I became a teacher, right? These days people want to become, take up the occupation that gives them the most income. And, it's always been this way that, teachers don't make a lot of money. So a lot of people don't really kind of incline towards becoming teachers, unless they're really passionate about it and they're willing to sacrifice money for the sake of this their profession. But if we knew what the virtues of the teacher are, in the hereafter and in the akhirat,
You know, a lot of people would definitely incline towards becoming teachers. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam has been reported as having said the following regarding the status of a teacher and the way that the teacher will be resurrected in the hereafter. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Shall I inform you who the absolutely most generous one is? Allah is the absolutely most generous one. And I am the most generous of Adam's offspring." And up to here, this hadith is not concerned directly about the teacher. But from here on, the Prophet, he alludes to the status of the teacher. He says, "And the most generous from amongst you all after me is the man who has been taught knowledge and subsequently spreads his knowledge to others." Meaning the teacher. First of all, he has gained a knowledge and subsequently he spreads his knowledge to others. He will be raised on the day of resurrection. This is the point where we get to the answer to our question. The Prophet said, "He will be raised on the day of resurrection as a community in himself." Meaning, he will be equal. This one person will be equal to a community in his status, in his rank in the hereafter. This is an interesting, expression. It reminds us of the way that Allah has referred to the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, in the Holy Quran. Allah calls the Prophet Abraham, a nation. Right? Meaning in and of himself, he was a nation unto himself. In continuation, the Prophet, he mentioned something regarding the status of the martyr. He says, "And after him," meaning the only person who is, and this is important, the Prophet says that after him is the man who is generous in giving up his life for Allah, mighty and exalted, and is killed for him. Right, so this kind of alludes to the fact that the status of the teacher is even higher than the status of the martyr on the day of resurrection. Right, if we knew this, this great, and the truth is that teaching is a very difficult profession. It takes a lot of patience, and only person who can really do this is somebody who has a lot of patience and a lot of self-sacrifice. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at what the rewards and status of a teacher are. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.